he shrugged. Something in the way he looked at her now made Jessen pick up the gun. She examined the ugly knot of steel in her hands. It was slipshod and awkward, but she believed it would function. She wondered how many nights, just the absolute number of them, she'd have opted to use something like this instead of seeing the dawn. They thought they were suicidal. Alston and Merrill and Lauren Morse, even Jellet, who should have known better. They thought their fear and claustrophobia were the same as what she carried. They were mistaken. Jessen was a citizen of that darkness. What Austin Core was peddling was a meaningful death. A die on your feet or live on your knees ending. He had to paint death as noble to get people to go along with it. He was an amateur. Jessen found the gun's chamber. There was a chemical cartridge in it, and a little lump of what might have been steel as the slug. She could imagine how it would feel if she held it out to Austin Core and plucked back the trigger. The surprise in his eyes. She could imagine holding it under her chin and doing the same, except that would upset Jellet. And, a little to her surprise, because she really didn't want to. What are you asking me for? We can make a few tools, but we don't have ways to mass-produce chemicals, Austin Core said. You do. You've already made biological weapons and used them successfully. Design some for us. Something that can break down these Carrick sons of bitches, bloody their noses for real, and make them think twice before they mess with human beings again. His smile was soft and wide. You make them, and we'll use them. Chapter 29. Can we do it? Tanner opened his mouth, closed it. The only thing in his mind was surprise. The only thing he could think to do was laugh. And it wasn't the funny kind. Jessen and Sinia sat across from him, the big window at their backs, so they were mostly silhouettes. Jessen looked serious. Sinia looked hungry. The silence was the hum of distant machines carried through the flesh of the prison walls and the breath of thin wind against the glass. Around them, the others, Kampar, Daffid, Ricker, Else, were sitting on the lab equipment or leaning against walls. None of the new people had come. This was just the family, and Tanner didn't have any clear idea what he could say. Kampar stepped in for him. It seems to me that's not the first question. I think we should start with why we would even consider it. Don't misunderstand, I appreciate dramatic flair, but we're talking about group suicide. We're talking about fighting back, Sinia said. When he'd first arrived at the prison, Else had told Tanner about Austin Core, and the way Sinia's grief had locked her into his plans for insurrection. It hadn't seemed critical at the time. It was a thing that had happened. Only here it was, still happening. The past hadn't passed at all. A distinction without a difference, Kampar said. If you fight back, it's still my head on the pike, and I'm not in the market for a death, however noble. I agree with Kampar, Al said. This seems like rushing into something we're not ready for. Ricker shook his head, shifted his weight. How much prep work can we be expected to do? If we're waiting for a good, safe time to revolt, that's the same as agreeing that this is our life now. We're going to do what the Carricks tell us to do. This isn't temporary. This isn't a rough period we're going to get through. His voice grew tighter with every word. Tanner felt himself tensing up with him. We can talk about the phrasing and the details, Ricker went on. Jessen's asking if we're willing servants. If you aren't going to fight back now, Sinia said, when are you going to start?
When there is a faint hope of success, Kumpar said. When it isn't futile. I'll keep looking for synonyms, but the central point I'm reaching for here seems clear to me. Is it not for you?
Hey, Tanner said, rising to his feet. The sharpness of his voice snapped their attention back to him. He looked over to Daffid, but the younger man was folded in on himself, thinking and watching and keeping his own counsel. Tanner lifted his eyebrow. You want to take this? Daffid didn't seem to notice him. This was the man Else had left him for. What a fucking joke. I'm not interested in the philosophy of freedom, Tanner said, maybe a little more sharply than he needed to. Or maybe not. Maybe what the group was missing was a smart tap across the cheek. Jessen, what exactly is the project Jellet's friends are proposing? They know what we did with the Night Drinkers. It's the same idea, just pointed at... She paused, carefully avoiding the word Carex. At a different target. No, it's not the same idea, Tanner thought. The words were half-formed before she finished speaking. The Night Drinkers had made the weapons, and they'd only had to reverse-engineer them. They'd even had the jump start that they were beginning with the same basic materials. They'd had a Night Drinker corpse and performed a dissection and basic protein assay. Getting samples of the Carex or their knife-legged Rakhund and exploding squat-bodied soft Lothark wouldn't be possible. No, they couldn't do it. Except, what if they could? I understand, El said, that they want to take a stand, but this isn't about our emotional health, Sinia broke in. This is about what we are, as a fucking species. Daffid had gone to the librarian's den enough that another visit wouldn't raise suspicion. He wasn't going to get the bastard to lie down for an exam, but he might be able to police up the alien equivalent of skin flakes and hair. The Night Drinkers had been able to make bombs. Jellet's friends had built pistols. Tanner? It was Else. Her gaze was on him, her chin down, her head tilted just a degree. Pulling him out of his head the way she used to back when the universe made sense. I'm not saying it's a good idea, he said. But is it a possible one? Maybe. Kumpar threw his hands in the air. Are you serious? These things killed millions on Ajian in the blink of an eye. And that was when we had warships and missiles and armies. You think a few scientists are going to do them damage with improvised handguns and biochemically active water balloons? I'm not saying that, no. But what's the first step? If we did it, the first step would be to figure out what we can about their physiology. Way before we got to application, there's a lot of basic research that's kind of begging to get done. And there's no downside to that. To knowing more. We know some basic things already. We know they need a high oxygen environment. We know they evolved as an aquatic species. We know, Kumpar said. We know what now? How do we know that? Tanner shot him the look he might have given to a first year asking the most obviously stupid question in class. Look at them. The physiology and size. Classic aquatic markers. But something drove them out of the sea at some point in their past into the high oxygen atmosphere of this planet. It's the only thing that allows a creature of that size to, great, all we need is a big fire and some buttery sauce and we can have a beach bake, Kumpar said. Just saying there is research we could do, Tanner replied, sounding more petulant than he wanted to. Sinia put her hand toward him, palm up, as if she were presenting him to the group. And since we aren't fighting those others any longer, we can use that part of the schedule for the resistance. Else looked down and away, her fingers rubbing together unconsciously like she was craving a cigarette. He'd seen her tempted often enough to know what it looked like, and he felt a little thrill, small and petty, knowing that he could still get to her. Maybe it was only on an intellectual level, but really that was where they'd always been the best together. "Do you really think they're going to give us the resources to construct some kind of Karak's plague?" Kumpar asked. "Well, they aren't afraid of bombs and guns," Tanner shot back. Daffid spoke for the first time since Jessen and Sinia had returned with Austin Kor's request. He had that same dreamy tone that he got when he'd only half been paying attention. "No, it's us. They're not afraid of us. Interested in, maybe. Hoping that they can use us. But they aren't afraid." "Whatever," Tanner said. "So, our answer to Austin Kor is not right now. But I don't see any reason we shouldn't start gathering the information and background that might let us..." The wide door shuddered and rolled open. The librarian of the human moiety stood in the corridor. Tanner's stomach lurched, and he took a breath he seemed unable to exhale. The black eyes shifted among them. When it trilled, Tanner thought, "This is it. This is how I'm going to die." But the voice that came from its translator was the same reedy, pleasant tone that it always had. "You will all come with me." Kumpar glanced a question to Daffid, and the younger man shook his head. Sinia's breath went ragged, and the color had gone from her face, but her chin was high and defiant. "Is there something wrong?" Daffid asked. "There is an alteration. You will come with me." Bricker shifted, and Tanner saw that he had the crowbar in his hand. The thought passed through the whole group, a shared understanding that had everything to do with living together so intensely and so long. If this was slaughter, they'd go down together, and they'd go swinging. Daffid stepped toward the Karak's first, then Else and Ricker. The librarian turned its back and started off, not bothering to see if the others followed. Tanner trotted over to the kitchen and picked up a knife before he followed. It wasn't much, but nothing was going to be enough. His hand shook. The librarian moved along the path they always took, heading for the vast common area and the laboratory alcove. The traffic of a dozen species parted before it, everything from every planet shifting to avoid its attention. They didn't just go about their business, though. A little crowd was forming, even as it kept its distance. Bystanders at the disaster, waiting to slake their curiosity. Jessen fell into step beside him. Her expression was blank and bland. Tanner knew the fear behind it, but she made it easier for him to pretend calm, too. When she spoke, her voice was steady and soft enough that it only just carried over the ambient hum of the place. "No soldiers." It was true. Among all the strange bodies and uncanny eyes all around them, there weren't any of the usual enforcers. They passed the empty socket that had been their alcove lab. The holes in the counters where they'd wrenched out the equipment looked like the wreckage of a war. That they'd done the violence themselves didn't make it better. He shifted the knife to his left hand, stretching out his right where it had started to cramp. He didn't recognize where they had been led at first, but he saw when the others did. Ricker's eyes widened, Jessen's narrowed, but it meant the same thing. The alcove was brightly lit, and the counters in it were like the ones they'd had in their own lab. There was even the red stripe at the top of the archway. Without the fungal mat filling it, there was no way to identify it as the night drinker's former home and the site of their slaughter. All marks of the little animals who had killed Irina had been erased. Inside, the space was similar to the one they'd had, but not identical. In one sample case at the back, a branched stick had a population of the little self-contained farming organisms they called berries. In another, the brightly colored, three-legged thing that wasn't a turtle. The librarian stopped in front of the cases and turned toward them. If it was aware of the weapons and fear that had followed it to this place, it didn't show any sign. The smaller, pale arms next to its mouth gestured at the cases. "These are from one of our subject worlds. This is of another. You will make these first organisms nourishing for the second." "The night drinkers," Daffod said. "The ones that were here? You have earned access to their resources. As you prove more useful, you will earn access to more resources." Tonner heard the unspoken other half of the statement. "Fail to be useful, and someone else will be moving into the space you used to live in." When the librarian moved, they all shifted out of its way, just the same as all the other subject races had. At the mouth of the alcove, other things shuffled back and forth and began to disperse. The show was over. If they all seemed a little disappointed that there hadn't been more blood and death, that might only have been Tonner's imagination. "Oh, look at this," Kumpar said, running his palm over a cabinet. "This is a dynamic imaging deck. I've always wanted one of these." Jessen put her hands on her hips, scowling at the space. "This stuff isn't going to fit in our rooms."
"Maybe it doesn't need to," Ricker said. "If the little shits are all dead, security isn't as big an issue, right?"
"Unless some other set of monsters is out there we don't know about," Jessen said. "Or unless one shows up from someplace the Kariks ate after they ate Ajian. We can't pretend we're safe. Not now. Not ever." Sinia's smile was triumphant. Tonner didn't like it.
"You know what this is? This is a sign."
"A sign," he said.
"The tools we needed to take on our new project, given to us exactly when we needed them. It's the universe telling us that Ostenkor's plan is the right thing to do."
"Or the natural playing out of consequences," Kumpar said, trying for lightness. "Hard to tell those apart sometimes."
Sinia shook her head. "It's a sign."
"Whatever it is, let's start with inventory," Tonner said. "Did anyone bring a pen?"
In the end, Daffod and Kumpar stayed to catalog the new equipment and begin the long process of calibrating everything to match the familiar devices back in their rooms. Jessen and Ricker stood guard at the mouth of the new alcove, him with a crowbar and her with a knife, talking to each other softly as they swept their gaze across the passing monstrosities. Else and Sinia headed back to the rooms to guard them and keep the protein assays running, and maybe rest or eat or eke some space out of the day for something like a life. Tonner wanted a book, or music, an entertainment feed showing bad comedies. He wanted a piece of art to look at and a glass of wine to sip. He wanted a cafe with a live band and a little bamboo dance floor. He wanted food so spicy it burned the next day when he took a shit. He wanted to meet a stranger in a library and to spend an hour flirting with them. He wanted a life. He wanted a possibility. Instead, he had an imaging deck, a magnetic lensing microscope, a more advanced protein library with self-generating speculative databasing and automated synthesis paths. A soft tooth separating grinder, they would probably be able to take tissues down to their cells without breaking as many cell walls in the process. Wonderful toys for a game he was tired of playing. Between manufacturing medicines for Jessen and whoever else wound up needing some in the future, and building the berries into a reliable food source for the turtles, they were already taking on a workload suited for twice as large a team. and then add on becoming a secret bioweapons lab in their spare time. What he needed was more people. What he needed was to care less about all of it. He didn't know what he needed. Urris Ostincourt, sitting on a stool, looked up as Daffid stepped into the room. His quarters were four levels down from Tonner's group, and in the opposite direction from Jellet and Merrill and Alston. The security man had kept his quarters spare and simple, yellow walls and an off-white floor. The same little kitchen that Jellet's quarters had, and an open room with chairs and stools and a low table of enameled metal. The others in his group were elsewhere or sleeping. Daffod didn't know which. "I was wondering which one of you it was going to be," Ostincourt said. "Which one of us?" "Jessens brought you my proposal. Somebody was bound to respond. The obvious choices were you or Fryce. Or it could have been Yannin. Sit, please. Tell me what's on your mind." "I'm not here as a spokesman. I mean, I'm not carrying some official message or anything." "As a friend and colleague, then. Really, sit." Daffod sat, and Ostincourt's smile widened a fraction, like he'd won some subtle point. "All right, Alcor. Tell why you think we shouldn't." "These projects they're having us do, they're only partly about the tasks." "I agree," Ostincourt said. "And I think we both know what the larger question is. All this? It's about domestication, isn't it? Every new species I talk to, they're either in fear or they're resigned to what's happened, or they're enthusiastically going along with it. The people like you and Jellet and Sinia, you're missing." "Survivor bias," Ostincourt said. "The ones who raised hell are all dead. Or who wouldn't engage with it? I think that's what happened to the hallway crows." "The what?" Ostincourt asked. "And the ones who didn't fit the mandate, who couldn't make themselves fit in if they weren't in open revolt. The night drinkers weren't trying to burn the librarian down. They were trying to burn us down, and they failed. I'm just trying to get my head around the whole thing. What the Carricks really want. Where the line is." "And you think it matters?" Ostincourt said. His voice was gentle in a way that made the small hairs on Daffod's neck stand up. "Look, I agree with you. We're seeing the same things, you and me. The Carricks killed an eighth of Asian in a blink. We're in their territory. There's no kind of guerrilla war against them that we can possibly win."
"That's true."
"Then what are we talking about?" Ostincourt leaned back, the front legs of his stool lifting off the floor. He looked at ease, and at the center of his calm was a cold rage.
"I remember you from the trip over, you know. How you tried to protect the jailers instead of fighting alongside Sinia and the others. I want you to know that I don't resent your cowardice. I understand it. What I'm asking you to be part of takes an exceptional courage. They can kill us. Not just us. If we convince them that humans can't be domesticated, I think that's everyone back home, too. The Carricks see everything that isn't them as a tool. And I think they throw away anything they can't use."
"You think they'd kill Asian if we rebelled here?"
"I don't know how to risk that possibility."
"That's already happened, son. That happened the day they took our sky for their own. You know what they're doing? You're thinking that if you just show your belly hard enough, if you just surrender utterly enough, you can control what they do. It's a grief reaction, and it's an error. Don't be ashamed of it. It's natural, but it's wrong.
But you're comfortable making that choice for everyone? Your noble last stand that gets everyone else killed is clearly right? Daffod was almost surprised by the buzz in his own voice.
I don't think there's any decision to be made. I have worked my whole career at the intersection of humanity and violence. The Carricks are trying to figure out whether we're domesticable. But I already know the answer to that. We aren't. We never have been. Someone is going to fight back. That's just the kind of primate we are, curling up and being good pets. It isn't going to happen, so we have between right now and whatever day the Carricks figure that out to do some damage. We can't win. I'm not stupid, Alcor. I know we're going to lose. We already did. But I'm good at organizing. I'm good at fighting. And I think I can bloody their noses on the way down. If I don't, someone who maybe isn't as good as I am will eventually try. And when they do, the consequences are going to be whatever your friendly librarian and its bosses decide they're going to be. There's not a goddamn thing any of us can do about it.
Chapter 30. There's not a goddamn thing any of us can do about it. Daffod sat in his usual spot, watching the play of alien traffic through the cathedral. There had been a joy in it before. He had wanted to share it, wanted someone to be at his side while they admired the grandeur and strangeness of it all. He remembered feeling that, but he didn't feel it now. He knew some of them. The bone horses were Phylarks. The clicking orbs were Umenti and Sun. The dog-sized crabs wouldn't say their names. Before, he had been an observer. He'd been an unintentional intruder in the vast organism. Now he knew names and histories. He had glimmers of the competitions and rivalries that shaped the beings there. The intersection between evolution and politics that came when whole species could be put to death. When his species could be. Would be. And there was not a goddamn thing any of us could do about it. There was a way that the world prison was very much like one of the berries. The way that the berries were really just a balloon skin around a rich pulp of other organisms that it managed and exploited, the Carricks were a boundary civilization that farmed other species, gathered other aliens, managed them, lifted some up, and edited others out. This was the pulp. They were the farm. Except that even the berries worked to keep their little farmed organisms alive. The night drinkers had possibly been poisoned into madness by too much oxygen in their air. One of Austencore's group had been dying of a very treatable hereditary disease. Jessen had nearly become suicidal before they coaxed the berries into making medicine for her, and the food supply was dwindling by the day. At every turn, the system the Carricks had set up said, "Be useful to us." But it seemed part of being useful was solving your own damn problems. Every species moving past him in the cathedral had faced the same challenge: find a way to stay alive and produce something of value to the Carricks. And as his sense of the prison as a vast organism, a city, a tissue made from 1,000 different kinds of cell grew deeper, the knowledge also intruded on him that there was a black thread in it. Little knots of humanity planning out their revenge like a cancer still too small to detect. He knew it was there, and it laid a sense of dread over everything. He wished that he knew the details of the plan, and he was glad that he didn't. A soft Lothark ambled past on its long, furry legs, The same kind that had exploded once and sickened him. The same kind that he'd seen eaten by its fellows. A flock of Jaster swirled overhead, glittering the yellow and blue of an angry conversation. David rose and turned toward home, walking slowly, pouring his attention into the slow shift from one foot to the other, like he was pouring the weight from one half of an hourglass into the other, and then back again. Letting his mind rest on something meaningless, innocuous, simple. The weariness in his body wasn't lack of sleep. Resting wouldn't fix it. He turned left instead of right, moving deeper into the cathedral-wide common area and toward the new alcove, the new lab, the spoils of war. He didn't particularly want to go there, but he didn't particularly want to go back to the quarters either. If there had been a bar, even if it had been half a day's walk away, he'd have been heading for it. Jessen was standing guard alone, and he saw her before she saw him. Captivity had changed her. The short, round-bodied woman that she'd once been had changed to someone thinner and sharper, like someone had put her on a grindstone and turned her into a knife. Her eyes had a darkness they hadn't had on Ajian, and she held her shoulders back and her chin up in constant, unconscious aggression. He tried to think when it had changed. On the transit, maybe. Or when she'd led the attack on the night drinkers. There were so many changes they'd all gone through. David wondered what she'd see in him, if she thought to look. She raised a hand as he approached. From the alcove behind her, human voices came. Kampar and Tanner, each talking over the other. Daffod nodded toward them, and she shrugged. "They have a difference of opinion," she said. "Tanner wants to start feeding things to the Knot Turtle. Tolerance testing. Kampar thinks we should keep mapping the plasticity of the berry's internal farm matrix." Her smile was thin, and he knew what it meant. As if any of this matters. She wasn't ready to say it aloud, but she thought they were all going to die. The conspiracy against the Carricks would come to its climax, make whatever mark they could against their oppressors, and then humanity would follow the night drinkers down to slaughter. His sense of weariness redoubled. In the lab, Tanner snapped, "It doesn't make sense." The expression that flickered in Jessen's eyes could have been impatience or contempt. Whatever, it wasn't how either of them had reacted to the team lead's temper before they'd come here. David wanted to ask how Jessen was, what she thought about Austin Kaur's proposal, if it made her feel as powerless as it did him. Instead, he nodded and walked away. Jessen went back to peering at the crowd and waiting for the next unanticipated violence. The mutter of alien voices and footsteps made a gentle roar like a waterfall. It drowned out the need for thought, and he let himself walk the pattern that habit had made for him. At the rooms, the wide door was cracked open, but nothing uninvited seemed to have made its way in. The common area was empty, and the handwritten notes that had been tacked on the wall shifted in the faint breeze. The resonance scanner was ticking to itself thoughtfully as it went through its run. Everything was as it was supposed to be, except that no one was there. Outside the window, the local sun beamed down through a brilliant blue-green sky. David sat alone, looking out, and remembering how it had felt when he was an adolescent and his parents had left him alone at home for the first time. The emptiness. And the possibility. That boy was gone now, and would never come back. The world he'd known had gone with him. A soft sound came from the hall. Cloth against cloth. When he looked back, Else was standing in the shadows. Her hair was messy from her pillow, and her face was sober and pale. Still, when their eyes met, she managed a little smile. "Where is everyone?" Daffod asked. Else shook her head, as if she were saying she didn't know, but then answered anyway. "Tanner and Kampar are working at the new lab. Ricker and Sinia went somewhere with Jellet. Jessen might be with them." "She's not. I saw her at the lab."
"She's there, then?"
"I was out. I was out for a while. Exploring."
"You should take someone with you. It's not safe out there."
"I know, but what are you looking for, anyway?" "I understood it when you and Sinia were trying to find other people, or patrolling. But the Night Drinkers are gone, and we found the other people, and you're still looking." She stepped out into the light. He expected her to blink or squint, but the shift didn't seem to bother her at all. Her fingers tapped against her thigh, fast and tight. Her lips moved as if she were speaking, but no sound came out.
"Else?"
"They can't fight back. Austincourt and Sinia and all the people with them, they're going to. It's their pathological move. It's reflex. It's the organism we are. If they try to kill the librarian or raise some kind of insurrection, we'll die here."
"I know, but maybe it makes sense to go down fighting."
Her jaw slid forward and her hands curled into fists. "It doesn't. It makes sense to win."
"I don't see how that's an option."
He tried to be gentle, but whatever storm was raging in Else's mind, he wasn't able to calm it. She moved sharply, pacing from the kitchen to the window and back again. Her lips twitched into the shape of words. Dread was a stone in Daffod's chest. If Else was breaking down, it was fair. She was the only one who hadn't so far. It was her turn. But he wasn't sure he had the reserves to help her. He was too near the edge himself. She paused at the window, looking out into the vastness. The grid shone in the sky. The ziggurats squatted below them, standing in ranks that passed off to the horizon. They were silent for a moment. She turned, leaned her shoulders against the glass. He had a powerful memory of being in her room on Agion, her leaning against a doorframe with the same posture. That had been just before the sirens started shrieking to announce the attack. It felt like an omen.
"I'm going to tell you some things," she said. Her rage had been replaced by an eerie calm. "I need you to promise you'll hear me out before you pass judgment."
"On you?
Promise me."
He shifted, leaned forward.
"Of course."
Else gathered herself, but only for a moment. The resonance scanner chirped that it had finished its run and went quiet, waiting for new instructions.
"There is a war," she said. "The Kariks are fighting a vast, terrible war. They have been for generations. It's touched hundreds of solar systems, maybe thousands. You've seen all the species they've put the color on. For every one of these, there are many they've judged unusable and eradicated. But this great war has another side. There are forces that are pushing back against them."
"How did you find out about—" She lifted a palm, commanding silence.
"They knew. The other side. They knew the Kariks were coming for Agion. And they knew how the Kariks treat conquered worlds. 6 months before the attack, they snuck a weapon
onto Ajian. It was... I don't know how to describe this. Think of a billion tiny machines that can take over a living host, hide inside it. The other side, they didn't give it a lot of information in case the Kareks found it. Just enough for it to perform a mission. Connect itself to someone who would be taken back into Kareks territory. Sneak in. Here. Right here. Else paused. Distress drew a vertical line between her eyebrows. Her fingers moved like she was looking for a cigarette she'd put down, then brushed her lips. The ghost of an old habit. Daffid wasn't sure if she was waiting for a response from him or gathering her thoughts. He waited. The silence only stretched a few seconds. This spy was supposed to get all the information it could. Intelligence gathering. And then it was supposed to find a way to send that data back out to the other side. In the sky behind her, something flared a bright yellow and faded just as quickly away. The stone in his chest was still there, but it meant something different. And you knew about this spy thing? It was in touch with you? Yes. The air seemed to have gone thin. You knew they were coming. You knew what they were going to do. The words came out from her high and fast, slowing as she went until she stopped like a balloon gently deflating. I did, in general terms. The work group was high status, and that's who the Kareks take. It's who they think they can learn from, make use of, however you want to phrase it. But I knew it was coming. I knew. And you didn't warn anyone? I couldn't. More resistance from Ajian would have changed nothing. The only result would be the Kareks wondering how the security forces knew. A reason to suspect. Maybe find the spy. She stepped away from the glass, pushing off from it with one shoulder and stepping closer to him. There's hope. That's the thing. There is hope. But it's a long kind of hope. A slow one. It will take a lot of suffering along the way, but... The spy. Where is it now? Else lifted her hand. For a moment he didn't understand. Then the motes shifting under her skin darkened and grew, flowing like a black snowstorm along the surface of her fingers, the subtle lines of her palm, before fading away again. It's in you. It's in me. For how long? She looked away. It could have been embarrassment. A long time. Is it conscious? Yes. Daffid's breath was slow, and it shook. The world had taken on a distance, like this was a dream he was having. He recognized that he was having a reaction, but he couldn't pinpoint the emotion he was feeling. Only that he wasn't angry. He was surprised by that. Is it you? I mean, are you still Else? I'm Else, she said quickly, sharply. I'm just cooperating with it? Something like that. It's complicated. I've been looking for a way to send out everything we've learned. There isn't one. The swarm's creators knew security would be tight. They suspected that it would be difficult to get information out while we were on one of the Kareks' home worlds. If we can get transferred to a conquered system, it should be less rigorous. And they do it all the time. There were probably a dozen different species they brought to settle on Ajian. We just need to survive long enough that they see a reason to take us along. But that's not going to happen.
Not if Austin Kaur goes through with his plan. I know this is a lot to take in. You don't have to say anything. Just, I know why Austin Kaur and Jellet and Sinia and all the rest of them want to fight. I want to fight too, and I could. I am the weapon of their greatest enemy. I could kill many Kariks before they destroyed me, if I chose to.
But that's not why you're here, Daffet said.
No. Because then I would be destroyed, and everything I've learned would be lost, and all to take lives the Kariks themselves won't care about. They think that if one of them was weak enough to be killed by an animal, then it should have been killed by an animal. What is, is.
You're saying we beat them all at once, or not at all?
Yes. The others want to make all this terror and pain right, but they want to do it fast, and if we go fast, we lose.
So, we tell them, Daffet said.
Else's smile was unmistakably her. He'd been thinking about that smile since he'd first joined the work group. He took her hand. It felt the way it always had. How would that go? She asked.
Best case scenario would be a debate with a lot of people arguing about it. The Kariks might seem like absentee landlords, but don't assume they don't have ears everywhere.
I wasn't even going to tell you, except now I need you to know, and I owe it to you.
Then isn't telling me right now a huge risk?
I can make sure no one listens for a while, but it's dangerous to do too often. The absence could become noticeable.
Does Tanner know about the thing inside you?
God, no, she said with a laugh. Can you imagine? He'd have me listed up there as another project to schedule out. Daffet found himself laughing too. His mind clung to the warmth, the normalcy, like he was drowning, and it was the only thing afloat. Else tapped his hip, motioned for him to move over. He made room, and she sat beside him. He leaned into her, then remembered the swirl of darkness under her flesh and shifted away. He felt her start to move toward him, to close the distance, and then hold herself back. After a time, he said, I don't know how I can stop Austin Kaur. I don't even know who's working with him. Not all of them. You can't do it. But you know someone who can. Her expression was an apology. The librarian. When he recoiled, she grabbed his arm. She didn't feel machine strong. Was she? If he just got up and walked away, would the thing inside her stop him?
Wait, Daffet, she said. Think it through.
If we warn them, then it's not all of Ajin that can't be domesticated. Just part of it needs to be culled. If I report the insurgents, then the Kariks will look at me more closely, and we can't let them do that. Of all of us, you're the one who assimilated the most. It would make sense coming from you.
If I warn the Kariks, they'll all be killed. They're going to die anyway. And everyone else with them. And more than that, we'll all die for nothing. We sacrificed the lives we knew for a chance at this. Maybe we didn't know it at the time, but it's what we did. If we can keep that chance alive, even just for a little while, we have to. We owe it to everyone who didn't make it. Noel and Irina.
In his mind, he saw Jessen sitting beside her brother for the first time since the attack. The darkness and pain that she'd carried, and the moment of light that the universe had given her. Daffet thought about being the man who took that away from her.
You kissed me just before the attack. Was any of what happened between us real? Or was it just part of your plan? Turn me into a willing tool for your mission. Because the choice you just dumped on me, I wouldn't ask that of my worst enemy. Else didn't answer. The machine inside her didn't answer. David wondered if he'd have been able to tell the difference. I have to think about all of this, he said when it was clear she wasn't going to speak first. I know that I'm asking a lot, and I understand why you distrust me. Just while you think it through, don't tell anyone about me. And David, don't take too long.
Chapter 31. Ricker shifted onto his side. Denia's bed was the same size and shape as his own, the mattress the same thickness and texture. It was only that there were two of them that made it feel different, exotic, dangerous. Denia had been a technical specialist, working with the high-precision lasers that the near-field visualization technology used. An engineer, not a researcher, but a critical member of the team all the same. She had a mole on the back of her neck and scars on her legs that she wouldn't talk about. She had a husband and a son back on Asian. Maybe she did. She didn't know if they were alive or dead. She didn't know if she would ever see them again. Ricker ran his thumb over her temple. Her pale brown hair was darkened now with sweat. Her eyes matched the color of her damp hair. That was lovely, he said. And when she chuckled, I mean, I hope it was. It was for me. Is there something I should be doing right now? Because if there's some finished work that needs attention. The chuckle turned into a sigh. That's very thoughtful of you. I'm fine. It had been a very long time since he'd felt this kind of release. He felt a little intoxicated with it, relaxed and warm and loose in the joints. Denia stretched, the same slow, easy movement as a cat in sunlight. Ricker reminded himself that this was a bad moment to decide whether he was in love. Better just to enjoy it and let the future take care of itself. I do have work, she said. We should probably... He kissed her again, once on the mouth, once not, then again. She caught her breath, shuddered, and pushed him gently away. That won't help me work. True, he said. They dressed. Ricker felt the lack of an in-room shower. Next time, perhaps, she could make her way to his quarters. They could sit by the window afterward and watch the sky. Jellet and Merrill were at their kitchen as Ricker saw himself out. They ignored him, but not coldly. In a world without privacy, etiquette had to suffice. The walk between the two work groups' quarters was growing as familiar as a commute. The wide, low plaza where groups of vaguely avian aliens gathered in a complex flock. The long, red-lit hallway with galleries leading off that smelled of mushrooms and peat. The well-known ramps. The curling halls that passed around the cathedral and the laboratory alcoves, of which they now owned, or at least had use of, two. Ricker was astounded as he walked by how good he felt, how light the burdens of the world were in that moment. He was hungry. He was pleased. He could imagine himself feeling just the same way while sitting in a street cafe outside Dian Academy and watching the aurora. The revelation was so obvious now that he'd had it. Even in prison, people indulged in affairs or fell in love. Even in prison, he could be surprised by moments of unexpected beauty. Life in captivity was still life. Unless and until he was thrown in total isolation, there would be the chance to make a human connection. He had food. He had shelter. He had work. He had a ration of joy and pleasure. There was no reason to think he would keep them, but... he had them now. His life hadn't ended. Yes, he'd been hurt, displaced, traumatized. He wasn't safe and likely never would be. But he wasn't killed. And life, even the joyful part that he would have thought was the first to wither and the last to return, was still there. People sang songs in death camps, and that wasn't a comfort until you were in a death camp yourself. As he turned the last corner, he saw Sinia. She was sitting alone, her back against the wall across from the wide door. He walked toward her, slowing as he came close. Her legs were crossed under her, her hands folded in her lap. The lines in her skin seemed deeper than they had back on Agian, or even in those first days after they'd arrived, when she'd been his only companion during the exile that Tanner had imposed on him. She didn't acknowledge him as he sat beside her. He shifted his weight, finding her good position. They'd spent days sitting beside each other before. The silence between them was comfortable and well-practiced. He relaxed into it. His mind had wandered onto old memories of a lecturer he'd had early in his career, who had broken up his classes with jokes and political commentary when Sinia spoke. Her voice was calm and matter-of-fact. "I don't know how old I am. I know how old I was the night they came. I know how old I was when they killed Noel. But how long ago was that? I must have had a birthday since then. Maybe two, three? I don't know. I've lost track."
"I think we all have. No watches, no calendars, no days, not the way we're used to them. The time in our spaceship cell coming over. That had to have been weeks, but I don't think it was months."
He thought back to the dim half-world, the thinness of the people who had come out of it, himself included, the beards, the rags that had been clothing. Had it only been weeks? He wasn't sure now.
"I tried to move past it."
"It?
Noel. I won't help the Carricks. I won't ever do what they tell me to do. But when we found out Jessen was in trouble, I thought maybe it would be all right. I could stand to help with the work if it was really for her, for one of us. But I hate them. I just hate them so much. I can't get past it. I can't get over it. I'm scared all the time, and I miss Noel, and I'm only angry now. Everything that isn't fear or anger is gone away."
She puffed her cheeks and blew out, like she was scattering dandelion seeds on the wind.
"Is that why you're sitting in the hallway?"
"Tanner was talking with Jessen about making food for the mock turtle. He's still doing what they want him to, and I couldn't listen to it anymore. Not right now. I didn't want to be in that cell of a bedroom, and I wanted to be alone."
"Ah," Ricker said. "Well, I screwed that up for you."
"It's not the same with you. We were exiles together. You're the one I can be alone with." He took her hand. For a while, they sat together. Jellet had just returned from a meeting with Skinnerling and Koss, the two engineers who were in charge of manufacturing more guns. The conversation had to be clandestine, because the head of the engineering work group had made it very clear that she didn't want anything to do with Austencore's plan. She'd been in the transit with Austencore and Jessen, and a friend of hers had died in Austencore's first attempt. Her emotions had the best of her, and she wasn't to be trusted. There were a lot of people who weren't to be trusted. Daffod Alcor, for instance. Jessen's friend was waiting for him outside the quarters, trying to look casual and failing. In the time since they'd appeared on his doorstep, he'd started wondering if bringing Tanner Freis's work group into the plan had been a good idea. Maybe he'd been wrong to vouch for them. It was just that he remembered them fondly from their old lives, and they'd taken care of Jessen when he couldn't. He'd let his emotions get the best of him, too.
Hey, Jellet said.
Good to see you, the research assistant said. I was wondering, this feels weird, but is there some place we could talk?
Sinia had warned that this might happen.
Dafydd had been opposed to the revolt in transit, had gone so far as to insert himself in the attack, and been made sick for his troubles. The older woman expected that he'd want to put the brakes on the plan now as well, and, unless Jellet missed his guess, here were the brakes.
Sure, Jellet said. Come on in.
The truth was, he'd liked Jessen's work group, been grateful to them even. The presence of other people in his sister's life, of work that she could feel pride in and be celebrated for, it had been a relief. Dafydd had been in the background, a pleasant, deferential man who'd brought coffee and pastries, the one who stayed behind to make sure the lab equipment was cleaned and dusted. There had been some connection to a rich family in the administration, but Jellet hadn't paid much attention to that. Abduction and imprisonment had been rough on the assistant, had been rough on them all, Jellet included. Merrill was standing guard, and she nodded at Dafydd as they came in.
I can take over, Jellet said.
She knew him well enough to read all the nuances of the words.
You're up, she said,
and he knew her well enough to know that he and Dafydd were welcome to their privacy for the moment, but that she'd want a full report when he was gone. She left the gun and went to the ladder, hauling herself up to the second level in the bedrooms. Jellet sat where she'd been.
What's in your mind?
I've been thinking about your joint project.
I know the one, Jellet said.
I wanted to ask if, just hypothetically, if you found a good reason not to go through with it, or even just to go slower, put it off for a while, would that be possible?
Jellet crossed his arms and leaned back on the stool.
I don't know what that would be.
Dafydd shifted, something like chagrin passing over him.
Fair point.
Let's try this again, Jellet said. What's on your mind? The tension in the air changed.
I'm worried about your sister.
Jellet's jaw tightened. Dafydd had no idea how wrong attack he'd just taken, and Jellet didn't feel any need to lift him out of his hole.
Tell me about that.
I was with her on the trip over. I saw her here when she was struggling and when she got hurt in the attack. She didn't talk much about how badly she missed you, how much not having you in her life hurt her, but I think it was hard. I think losing you made everything else she was going through worse, and I don't want her to lose you again.
Lose me by...
Fine, I'll speak plainly. I don't want her to go through the thing she'd feel watching the Carricks kill you. And if that plan goes forward, you and everyone else involved with it being executed is the best case. That's what I'm saying.
All right, Jellet said.
All right.
I hear you. You're here to see if I'm really committed to the plan. If I'd reconsider.
Maybe step back from it for Jessen's sake.